The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back here, the second half of the program, and let's get back to the calls before the guests come back to the show. And how about Mason in New York? Hey, Mason.
Hey, Paul. It's me calling from West Point again.
Oh, great to hear from you.
Before I get to the real question, where can I get a picture like Daryl up on the screen?
That's not hard to do. We just need to put you on hold at the end of the call and tell you how to get us a picture. It's not difficult at all. Or is there another way? I'm trying to think if you could email us one to the show, but we'll figure it out.
Thanks, Paul. So the real question is, I'm a big Ole Miss fan, and I was wondering, like, the prospects of Matt Corral having another big year and maybe his NFL future. I know he's quite a small quarterback, like 6'2", kind of scrawny, but, I mean, he could throw the ball pretty well. So I was wondering, like, what you think his NFL prospects are, like, maybe like an NFL comparison.
Yeah, I mean, someone called up today and said he's definitely coming back, Mason, so I think that is the most positive thing, but next time I get Lane on, I'll get his interpretation of that. I think he's good enough. I'm not exactly sure how you make it work, but it's not the most impossible thing to do. But let me put you on hold here, Mason, just for a second. And if I hit the right button, we will make sure you get hooked up here. How about, who is this? Jasper next up. Hey, Jasper, go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
We're doing well. Thank you.
First-time caller.
Well, good to hear from you.
Read your papers back in the day.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you remembering.
Daryl just needs to let a few things go. It's the way you say things. People take from what you say, and he just doesn't know how to articulate himself.
Well, hey, Jasper, if you've read me in the past, you know that I'm not afraid to offer opinions on any subject. And I'm not avoiding this subject. I think you have to understand what it is. Vanderbilt needed a kicker. They had one on campus. Was there more to it? Maybe. I think this weekend will be a better example of Sarah. She's apparently been chosen to kick the whole game. So, you know, hopefully she'll get an opportunity to do more than opening the second half. But, you know, we're not, this is not a apples to apples conversation. Nobody's advocating that she tried out for the football team. She didn't. She was on the soccer team. And they asked if she could help out, and it turned into an international story.
Well, this goes beyond Vanderbilt football with Daryl. I'm just saying, he needs to learn how to say what he feels.
Yeah, I feel like I'm qualified to offer an evaluation or an opinion on Daryl. And, I mean, his opinions on matters of race and gender are pretty well known, and I don't think the audience needs me to elucidate how he feels about certain things. He lives in an antediluvian world. He's a caveman.
We're past caveman now. Look, huge Alabama fan. I think this season is going to be probably one of the best ones we've had in Saban's tenure.
Yeah, I mean, if statistically, which means nothing other than a snapshot of what's happened so far, this could very well be his most dominating team. I've sat in national championship games before, twice, in fact, thinking similar things and seen disaster occur. I'm not expecting that this year, but Nick Saban is only concentrating on one thing, that's finishing this year. If nothing changes, then I think it's going to be a national championship for him. Thanks for the call. Do appreciate it very much. Richard is in Mississippi. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Paul. See, thanks for taking my call. I've called you a few times. See, couple quick things. First of all, you know, you got to grin when you hear your song, Come On, Call Paul. We've all heard it. I can't tell you how many times. And every time I hear it, if you could just see me, it's so humid. So thanks for that.
Well, thank. Oh no. Hey.
Who sings that?
Taylor Hicks, the former American Idol winner, wrote the song and performed it. He's an old friend of mine from Birmingham, and Mark Kubiak, who is our producer, reached out to him one day, and they came up with it, and he's adjusted it a little bit. But I mean, the biggest kick I get is when I, you know, back when we would go campus to campus every week, I'd run into young kids. I'm talking about, you know, 4, 5, 6, and they would come up, and that's all they knew. They start singing the song, and that's really was gratifying to see.
Yeah, we need something lighthearted every day to kind of get us going, and I do enjoy that. But I got a couple of quick comments. Thing, you know, first of all, my take on Sarah Fuller is just I don't know how anybody could say it's anything other than wonderful.
Yeah,
I don't know how anybody could get on and be so cynical and make this something that is absolutely not. You know, I have to believe that there were many kids, women, guys, whoever just clapped their hands to just how wonderful that was, and you know how inspiring it was to somebody, whether it be a little girl or whatever. It's the first time in a long time that Saturday morning I told my wife, hey, did you know that there's going to be a female kicker kicking for Vanderbilt? And I just wanted her to see that. I don't know why.
Richard, I'm glad you said that. And I think that, I mean, if you're a girl dad, if you got grandchildren, it doesn't matter. I think that's where this story was so great. It's something you have to appreciate. And, you know, I look around and see some of the media, you know, just going to the lowest common denominator to attack her and what was behind it. It was a 41-0 loss. I mean, nothing really changed. But that's okay. I mean, I people can say whatever they want. I've always believed that. But I think sometimes when you offer opinions and just, you know, you're also exposed for yourself.
I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, the day is coming where something like that might happen to another.
Sure.
It has an entirely different meaning.
Well, and I, you know, I mean, Richard, I'm not going to get on a soapbox, but you know, women, it hasn't always been a fair playing field. And that's a fact. And, you know, this is not about that. I mean, this is not a young woman who just decided to make a statement. She was playing soccer one week, and next thing you know, she's kicking.
She was asked to be played.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the way I took it. But see, I want you to know that I'm an Ole Miss guy. And love the Rebels this year, and love Lane Kiffin. I think he's in the right place at the right time to get our program where it needs to be. But I was thinking about LSU's schedule, you know, and I guess I understand why it's important for them to play Alabama and then play Florida. Although Alabama, I think is the best football team I've seen in quite some time. But nevertheless, you would think that LSU would really want to play Ole Miss real bad. I think that would be a very entertaining game. The last time that I can remember Alabama being challenged at all this year, it was against Ole Miss.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. They were challenged a little
well,
bit.
Well, I mean, that game was
on the same playing field.
Hey, that game was in doubt. That's the only time this year in Alabama. Well, the first half of the Georgia game. But other than that, Alabama, you know, got taken apart that night and still managed to win.
Yeah, and if you can kind of see what it goes to Nick Saban's brilliance of what he has done with that defense since that game. I mean, they have stepped up and literally just shut down everybody. A lot of people say they hadn't played anybody, but this is SEC football.
Yeah, I would disagree with that.
He showed just how brilliant he is, and I kind of feel for LSU having to play, honestly, Alabama and Florida back to back.
No, it's a.
Hopefully they'll get
it's
to,
a. It, it
to
is
play.
A.
Ole Miss.
I mean, the good news is that LSU is getting a little bit better. The bad news is the schedule is brutal. Hey, thanks for the call, Richard. We have to go to a break.
Yep.
We have Greg McElroy coming on here in a minute. We'll get his thoughts on the upcoming weekend of college football and more of your phone calls as we continue.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome all of you back to the program. It's always a pleasure to welcome in Greg McElroy on the middle of the week segment. And Greg, thank you for the time. Let's start with a decision that came out late yesterday. The ACC, assuming everything goes according to plan this weekend, will give Notre Dame and Clemson the weekend off prior to the ACC championship game. Some have even encouraged the SEC to do it. We've heard absolutely nothing on that front. Your reaction to all of this?
I think it's really bad precedent. And I understand exactly why the ACC is doing it. They're trying to protect the integrity of the championship game and to prop it up in the biggest possible way. And I'll say this too, Paul. Like, I don't anticipate Notre Dame or Clemson losing either this week or next. I don't anticipate that. Like Clemson, for instance, they're the team that would legitimately be in jeopardy of maybe missing the game, because if they lost another game, then that would be two losses in the ACC, and if Miami ran the table, then they could potentially jump the Clemson Tigers. I don't think Clemson's going to lose to Virginia Tech, and I don't think they're going to lose the 30-point favorite against Florida State, but we're setting a bad precedent. That's the problem, is what if, for whatever reason, we've seen 30-point dogs win in the past. It happens. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's remarkably rare, but it's not unthinkable. And now we are saying, you know what, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have a huge impact, so we don't need to necessarily play the game. I think that's really not the best way to proceed. Now, this is a unique year, and I think all of us have acknowledged the fact that we need to be flexible, we need to be open-minded, and that not all conferences are going to create an equal playing field because of the challenges of scheduling and the flexibility we have to have when it comes to that. But I just did not like the look. I thought the optics were bad. I think it certainly props up both Notre Dame and Clemson, which, by, for the most part, that's what the ACC is tasked with. But I think it's a slippery slope in the future, and it might be something that could backfire in them down the road.
Which brings us to the Big Ten and the conundrum up there. You're heading to Wisconsin tomorrow for the Indiana game, and you know they are in a really precarious situation where they may have to do something to adjust. What are your thoughts on the plight of Ohio State right now?
Well, it's a challenge. I mean, there's no denying it's a challenge. But I think they are well within their right in the Big Ten to reward teams for having played games. I mean, if you've played seven games like Indiana very well may, or eight games, by the way, and you lost to Ohio State. We all acknowledge that, and I think if they played again, I think you, and I don't want to speak on you on your behalf, Paul, but I would pick Ohio State to win again. I would. I think Ohio State is the better team. Now, Indiana had a really nice second half performance, and Michael Penix was incredibly good down the stretch and gave them a chance to get within striking distance, but Ohio State is the better team. But Ohio State's played four games at this point, and right now, the next two games are a little up in the air based on the things that I've read. So if that does in fact come to fruition and we fast forward 2 weeks and Ohio State's still sitting there at 4-0, is that enough of a sample size to justify inclusion and for them to essentially bend the rules to accommodate the best team in the league? I don't know if it is. I mean, if they want to go about that, that's fine, but I just don't think it's right. You set a precedent in the preseason. Barry Alvarez, for instance, came out. He was in charge of, or on the panel and on the committee of kind of deciding how are we going to go about returning to play. And he helped along with many others. He said, we need to have 6-game minimum. And that makes a lot of sense. If you have more than that canceled, you are not eligible for the Big Ten championship game. You can still have a game on championship Saturday, but you're not eligible for the Big Ten championship game, which I think is totally understandable. But I also think now that they're discussing possibly bending those rules, I don't think that's the best way to go about it. I hope that Ohio State gets these next two games played and they play in the Big Ten Championship, Paul. But to bend the rules to accommodate Ohio State, I'm just not sure that's the best way to go about things.
Greg, Heather Dennis was on here earlier in talking about the committee and you know this debate about where should Texas A&M be. And she even brought up Cincinnati. Not so much with A&M, but Cincinnati with everyone in terms of trying to determine that fourth and final spot. You've been to A&M this year. You've seen them play. So it's not just an eye test with you. I mean, you've actually gotten a good look at this club. How do you evaluate A&M, assuming that they get past the next couple of weeks?
They have a very high ceiling, Paul, as evidenced by the performance really in the first three quarters against Tennessee, and then if you look at what they did against South Carolina, those were dominant showings. But I would actually say, Paul, that their poor performances outnumber their incredibly good performances. I thought the Florida game was fantastic. If they were like that every week, this team is deserving of playoff consideration. Problem is they haven't been like that every week. We've saw them struggle against Vanderbilt, struggle against Alabama, do great work against the Florida Gators, and then struggle a little bit, being less than stellar offensively against Mississippi State. And then, of course, most recently, this past Saturday, in what was a difficult circumstance to play the game, a lot of water, a lot of rain, inclement weather that had an effect on the passing game. That was a boring game. It was an awful game to watch, and their offense was stagnant throughout the course of it. And I know there was bad weather. I get that. I acknowledge that. But it was a tough watch. And Kellen Mond did not play well. I know it was a wet ball, but you got to be, as a senior, even more consistent than what he was on Saturday. So I think right now they're a good spot. I think they're appropriately ranked fifth. But when we get down to it, it's going to depend on the teams in front of them. The only way they can get in the playoff is if chalk flies, Alabama beats Florida, Notre Dame beats Clemson. That would eliminate Clemson with two losses. That would open up both the 3 and the 4 spot. A lot of us still think the Big Ten champion, being Ohio State, will occupy one of those spots. And then you have kind of a big question. Is it going to be Texas A&M? Is it going to be BYU, who still has some scheduling flexibility and might find a game on the 19th that could improve their resume? Or is it going to be Cincinnati, who might run the table and look pretty impressive doing so? So those would be the three teams that would be up for the fourth spot. And to be honest with you, Paul, I don't like A&M's chances.
Let me ask you about Cincinnati, because I mean, Luke Fickell's done a fantastic job. They are really an impressive team to watch. But from an analytics standpoint, when you see them, when you look at them, how would they compare with the best teams in the country?
They're the one team, Paul, and I called their AAC championship game last year against Memphis. So I got to see them up close and spent some time around this program. I think they're the one team in the group of five, because I don't consider BYU group of five. BYU is non-power five. They're not a group of five team. I called two of their games last year, and that group getting off the bus looks like a power five team. They're big, they're physical, they're mature, they have good personnel on the perimeter and in the backfield, especially a quarterback where Zach Wilson is a future NFL player, probably a starter, probably a first-round pick. So I think BYU is, just because they're not in the Power 5 doesn't mean they're Group of 5 to me. They're just not in the Power 5. I think they are one of those independents that's kind of in a league of their own. Not all that dissimilar to Notre Dame. A step down from Notre Dame, but still remarkably talented and very, very good. But I would say that Cincinnati is the Group of 5 team I've seen up close. And I've called UCF games. I'm not talking about UCF speed and their style of play. They're a difficult matchup. There's no denying that. UCF's a really difficult team to contain. But if we're talking about winning games against Power 5 teams, which are one in the trenches, that's where the biggest differentiator is between the Power 5 and the Group of 5, is the size and strength and just flat out depth along both the offensive and the defensive lines. And after watching Cincinnati very closely last year, I think they are one of the very few teams in the Group of Five that could actually fare quite well if they did face a Power Five schedule.
Let me look ahead. There are a lot of games to talk about, but and I'll spare the Alabama-LSU game, because it does look, even though LSU is playing a little bit better, it looks like it's not coming down to the last play of the game. But the two intriguing games, I think, are Auburn hosting A&M. You've already alluded to A&M, yeah, and Tennessee and Florida. A quick thought on those two, and you know, could either one of those games, or which one of those games do you think has the best chance of maybe being a surprise?
Now, I think Auburn is still a game with Texas A&M playing in Jordan-Hare. Paul, we called a game there a couple weeks ago, man. Even at 20% capacity or whatever it is, that place rocks. I mean, it's a tough place to play. And A&M has been a team, like I mentioned a second ago, they've been up and down. I mean, what are we going to get from them? If you're going to tell me we're going to get the A&M team that played against Florida, then yeah, I like them winning by a couple touchdowns. But if we're going to get the team that played against LSU, I think Auburn will win. I really believe that. And I think Auburn certainly had their fair share of struggles last week, and they obviously missed a lot of opportunities. You know, their offensive line didn't play very well. They were missing their left tackle. They didn't get any type of rhythm, and they didn't use any tempo. I hated their offensive plan last week. I thought it was just really lacked a lot of creativity. And I thought Alabama was able to just chomp down, and it was over before it began there. But I think when we look at Auburn, they have had moments in which the offense is operating with pretty decent tempo and pretty decent consistency, but we just haven't seen it every week either. If that offense shows up, and if Bo Nix is accurate on the downfield throws, and the receivers are still doing a really nice job of creating separation, which they've done a decent job of throughout the course of the year, with the exception being last week and against South Carolina, where Seth Williams really struggled, I think they can be a little bit of a matchup problem for Texas A&M. But I'm going to pick Texas A&M to win the game, but I think Auburn does have a chance, if they play really well, to pull off the upset, whereas I think Tennessee is going to have their hands full. I think the game could look a little bit like Florida's game last week against Kentucky, where they maybe got off to a little bit of a slow start. It's maybe a little closer at halftime than you might expect, or maybe even a little bit like the Vanderbilt game, where Vanderbilt got off to a hot start and they all of a sudden had a lead, and Florida's looking at themselves like, how did this happen? And they worked themselves into a rhythm in the second half, play better on both sides of the ball, and eventually pull away. So I think that game could be a little close early, but Florida, with the power, the firepower they have on the perimeter and their quarterback, I just don't know if Tennessee can hang with them throughout the course of the game.
Greg McElroy, always appreciate it. Greg, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you for the time. We are heading to a break, and we'll get more of your phone calls here in a minute at 855-242-7285.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we welcome you back. Great to have all of you here on a Wednesday afternoon, early Wednesday night. How about Jeff in Columbus up next? Hey, Jeff.
How you doing, Paul?
Jeff, we are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, Paul, do you remember which caller would talk to you before the season started and would say that this COVID situation is going to expose how major college sports and especially major college football and how poorly it's run and managed? Do you remember a caller ever saying that at the beginning of the season?
I do, yes.
Okay. Because it has. It's so obvious as we're getting into the final stretch of the season that this thing is almost turning in to a little bit of a train wreck and a reaction as you go every week. And give me an honest answer, Paul, because you usually do. Do you think Herbie should have apologized last night?
No. But
I don't either.
But I understand how that works, having been there before. And the second you say something, I mean, he said it on a primetime show, so the apology later doesn't really matter. The damage is done.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying, I think. I understand why Kirk apologized. I get it. But do I think he should have? No. Because Kirk's not a hot take guy in general, like a Danny Cannell, a Peter Burns, you know, guys like that that have driven me crazy for years. And Kirk usually goes with what he's heard from talking to coaches and players from prep work the week before a game. Don't you agree?
Well, listen, I know Kirk well, and I consider him a close friend, and he speaks from his heart, but he also
right.
speaks with more knowledge than anyone else in the game. So, I mean,
right.
Kirk Herbstreit can get on the phone today with any head football coach in this country, and very few, I'm not sure anyone else can make that statement, maybe one or two of his colleagues at ESPN or somewhere else. But so he knows what he's talking about. He gave an honest evaluation, and the next thing you know, it blew up. And I can tell you, when that happens, there's only one way out of it. Whether there's two ways out of it. You either say, hey, blanket, I'm not apologizing. And by the way, Jeff, I've been there before, and
right.
and then I've no one ever tells you to apologize; they just suggest that you do. And
right.
knowing him, he said, you know what, the best thing to do is just say I'm sorry and move on, and it usually works. And it was a big story for a few minutes, and a few people have come after him. But I wasn't sure it was a real issue a couple of weeks ago, but I think it is now. I mean, there are a lot of people that just want to see this season end because of a lot of mismanagement.
Exactly.
And you're watching it in real time, and the fact that the Big Ten just continues to fiddle while Rome burns is astonishing to me.
Yeah, but I think when I heard Kirk talking last night, I can hear his real problem and his real frustration is how the game of college football is being exposed this year and the direction it's going. And this has been my problem. Who's been the biggest critic of ESPN and a lot of the national media to you in the last 2-3 years, Paul?
Well, it's you, obviously.
Yeah, and this is why. Because this is what's frustrated me, and I think what's frustrating Kirk right now, this whole from the beginning of the season of who's in, who's out, who's in the Heisman race. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well,
and this is where I blame ESPN management. I don't blame guys like Kirk and Reese and these guys to get put out in front of the cameras. But when College Football Playoff Committee and ESPN form this package, they've got way too many.
But Jeff, you have to understand something, and I speak for myself, obviously. I am an employee at ESPN, just like thousands of other people, and no bigger or no smaller than the next person. But everything is a partnership these days, whether it's the NFL, the NBA, or college football. And, you know, ESPN has partnerships. And you understand what I'm talking about. And
I do. And you're almost writing the script of my call, Paul. I was just going to say, but the problem of it is, it's a closed partnership.
True.
It's one network and still a good old boys network. You don't have a partnership like the NFL or the NBA.
Well,
you've got conferences that are disjointed, Paul.
No, I agree. I mean, college football has college football is not a monopoly, though. Fox has a big stake in it. CBS is fading away. I mean, they still have
the playoffs.
Well, no, I agree. And you know, everybody but you know, the NFL has done it correctly. They make everyone stand at the door with their hand out.
And the NCAA tournament's gotten smart by spreading the games up over multiple networks.
Well, hold on a second. It's still the same company, though. Well, it's not the same company, but
I know that. But they promote it.
No, you're right. You're right. And the reason for that was CBS couldn't afford it by themselves, so they did go in partnership with Turner, which is a separate company. Let me correct myself.
Right, and I watch NFL games on Sunday, and Fox is promoting games on NBC that night because they're true partners. College sports and college football is a bunch of disjointed conferences.
No, it's right.
That really are competitors.
Hey, what Tim Brando said here a couple weeks ago, he's been saying it for a long time. It is now coming back to this season. Is I don't know where it's going to end. Hopefully it ends on January 11th. But a lot of damage has been done, and the sport has been exposed worse than it's ever been. And you know, you may not hear that on this program or elsewhere, but it's true.
You heard it from me. You know you heard it from me, Paul. And this is the problem. They've gone to one. It's so close. I don't agree that's a partnership. It's a partnership between the playoffs and ESPN, and that's it.
Well, Brando described it as a cartel.
Yes. And so what's the incentive for Fox, CBS, and these other networks to promote the playoffs, to promote the majority of the bowl games, to talk about the game in general? Because it's monopolized at one network for the most part. And why in the hell they have so many ranking shows? I've said it from the beginning. All they've done is set up themselves to fail.
Jeff,
when you have
that's
all it is.
Well, okay, we have to go to a break. But it's a relationship, and those ranking shows are television events. I mean, come on. Now, that's not hard to figure out. They create interest the next morning. On the other shows, everybody's talking about it. That's the whole concept behind it. They don't mean all that much. I mean, I watched that guy last night from Iowa. He's representing the committee. That's a hapless job to get out there and speak for 13 people. It's pretty tough to do. Quick break. More phone calls at 855-242-7285. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
And we welcome you back. Great to have you all here on what is now Wednesday night. Another hour and change to go. And more of your phone calls right now. Augie in New Orleans is up next. Hey, Augie.
Hey, Paul. Man, this whole college football situation has caused just from Columbus a lot of consternation, huh?
Well, I wish I'd paid more attention since he got everything right, Augie.
Well, yeah, he asks a lot of these rhetorical questions. And when he was asking you who the biggest critic of ESPN and the media was, I knew you were going to come out and say Jim, but you surprised me and said it was Jeff.
Well, he has been one of his shticks for a long time is to try to make me uncomfortable with the people that I work for.
Well, you know, I wanted to chime in there when you were talking about the fact that you're just an employee there. Hey, you got a union steward, right? Isn't it Brahms? You can go to Brahms and lodge a complaint, can't you?
I didn't realize that, but I will from now on go to local 1234 Brahms.
Yeah, check Article 5, Section 6A, and you have rights, Paul, even though you are just an employee, as you say, of ESPN.
I can assure you, and I don't need to tell you, Augie, when you read one of these contracts and sign them, you don't have any rights.
Well, if you've ever been before the NLRB, I can tell you what. It's I think going to court for a slip and falls fund. This is even worse. But, Paul, you got another call from Bob from Brooklyn today.
Yeah, that was the farewell call. I keep going to Bob expecting something else, and unfortunately, I don't know what Bob does in Brooklyn other than ascertaining our phone number, but we're putting Bob to bed.
Where do you think Bob lives in Brooklyn? You asked him that question, and he kept talking about, Alabama football. I'm like, it'd be interesting to know what part of Brooklyn he's from. Not that I know that much about Brooklyn, but hey.
Yeah, it just feels like he's at a pizza parlor, just barely over the, the East River, kind of looking into the Wall Street financial district, and he goes in there every day. He borrows the payphone and he calls us.
Hey, you see, I don't know how much it costs to make a phone call on a public phone. I haven't even seen any public phones lately. But
I haven't either.
Yesterday, when you needed your boy Matt to save you, I don't know what happened. Matt dropped, but he came on later. Matt had an opportunity to be a hero, but he missed his chance. But, you know, it's all about opportunity, and he blew it. But I got to say this. If I can be happy about one thing this year, it's that we might, LSU, might have put a damper on A&M's getting to the playoff.
That turned out to be a bad win for them.
It was really a bad win. And again, like I mentioned in my call on Monday, LSU could have won that game 17-13. They had a touchdown that I really thought was a touchdown call back, but, it's subjective.
Well, but don't you think it evens out, Augie, after the calls in the Arkansas game?
Well, again, I defend the Arkansas game. I do not say that was a cheap win at all. And for all the Arkansas fans out there, hey, you got Walmart. What more do you want? But, Paul, you spent a lot of time this week talking about females in college football or, the Vanderbilt example.
Right.
And people were really concerned about, what if she got hit? And, oh, by the way, I think you could have squibbed the kick just as well. So I want to put that out there. But have you ever gone into a Walmart? There are women that could be offensive linemen. And if you want to get even bigger, go to a Dollar General store. So I don't think the issue of women hurting or getting hurt playing football is that big a deal, because I know there are a lot of women.
Anyway, there are a lot of great women athletes. Cat Daddy is up next in South Carolina. Hello, Cat Daddy.
Hey, big ball, looking good, sounding good. Clemson Tom came in today with a joke. I didn't think it was that funny, but I'm going to tell it to you. Is that all right?
You got it.
Nick Saban passes away and goes to heaven.
Okay.
When he gets up there, God says, I got the special cottage for you. He carries him a little tiny cottage. It's got the Alabama Crimson Tide flag on it, about 5 feet tall. And Nick says, Lord, I appreciate this. So he's walking into his house. He looks up to the east, and he sees this three-story gold mansion. Got a 50-foot tall flag with a tiger paw on it. Tiger paws all over the windows. Big pool, Olympic pool with tiger paws all in the pool. And he said, Lord, I don't mean to be ungrateful, but I took two different schools at the SEC and won the national championships, Moe and Dabo. Why does he get a house like that? The Lord chuckled at him and said, Nick, that's my house.
That's a good one.
I didn't think it was that funny, but if you did, that's good then.
I've heard that joke with I think Tim Tebow being the the subject of it. I think Joel Osteen told it the first time I ever heard it, but it's a great joke just to slip in anyone's name that you want. Hey, thanks for the call, Cat Daddy. Good way to end the hour. We are taking a break here and coming back with much more. We hope you'll give us a ring at 855-242-7285. We have covered a lot of ground here with Ross Dellinger and, of course, Heather Dinich giving us the absolute latest on the college football playoff and the issues that are facing the Big Ten. We still have an hour to go, and we hope you'll stick around. We are coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.